to finish up by Easter, everyone shines and everything in.
By Easter or after Easter, brother?
Well, yeah, after Easter, but you know, I guess because I'll be away from, you know, the Monday the 11th of April, I'll be back around about the 20th.
Easter, Good Friday is
14th. Yeah. There's 2 weeks here, I'll be there. A week and a half.
So when you come back, after you come back?
After we come back, I'd like to start the seventh canto. So, you know, we hope that everyone's got all their assignments in. How are you going? How are you going? Should we be good? I didn't quite hear that. Sometimes you talk very softly. Not very often, but sometimes I've noticed. Usually you're quite, you know. Yeah. So what was that?
It's not coming.
Just give me a little tap on the back of the head.
Yes, probably after the Easter break. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no problem.
Good.
Right. So we're looking at
our friend Naveen is also going to India.
Yeah.
Around the same time.
So yeah, but he's handed in quite a lot. He's really doing quite well. Yeah,
he brought some more.
And he's got some more. You get a couple to that. have a quick look there. Anything under there?
I think once you start writing, the flow comes in.
It does. Once you start.
Yeah.
There's a saying that I'd be unstoppable if I could just get started. Do you know that saying? Yeah.
Yeah,
this is good. Yeah. Closed book.
It's actually open book.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
These are the essays.
And you've got some essays. Yeah.
So that was the remaining. So completed.
So yeah, all done. There you go. Then. So it's
New chapter.
There you go. So that's what we want to see. Just, you know, get them done.
It's good.
By Easter, and because I need to, you know, I need to get them all in one batch. You know, if you sort of get left out of the batch, it causes difficulties because they have all sorts of problems in their, the way they do things.
So from 24 is it, remember? Unit 24 of those, backwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
So get stuck in, because time is really running out. You'd have to do, you know, several each week, plus the closed book. Now we've done, we are down to unit 12 now. And even these, we're going to go through a lot quicker with these. You know, basically we've got, you know, two or three lessons and you know, we'll have covered everything.
Okay.
So, you know, so that we're doing now from Unit 12 to Unit 1, the open book, and you know, Vallabhagura Sundra, he's pretty much, he's only got three that he hasn't done, which I'm sure he'll probably do while he's over there. Surya, there's, you know, you've got 10 of these to be done, plus the other ones from Unit 24.
10 of what?
Open book essays.
Oh, open.
Yeah, so you've done 1 and 2. So from, you know, 12 down to 3 need to be done, plus, you know, the other ones above them. And Anantavirya also. Gopi Brindesh has got about 3. Pretty Lakshana needs to do them all as well. Janavi Jivan has done a couple. Prishni's done 1. So basically, apart from Vallabhagura Sundra, then Nirmala has done all of them. She's done, you've only got 11 and 12. Right, from 12 down to 1, you've done 1 to, you know, you've only got 11 and 12 to do, which we'll cover today. So, you know, after this, you don't necessarily, you know, on a Saturday, if you've got time, you can just do your essays. You don't necessarily need to come along. And Sveta has, she has nothing to do.
She's completed.
She's completed from 12, you know, from 12 down to 1. So she doesn't have to come in to any more, you know, of these lessons until after Easter. So if she gets time, it's just finishing whatever she needs to finish, you know, from 13 to 24. And let me have a look.
So they're going backwards in honor of Rebbe?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it looks like Sveta, what's she got? Yeah, it says faith. Yeah, there's, you know, it's just from whatever she's missed from 13 to 24, she just do that. She doesn't necessarily have to come to any more lessons. So really, it's, and Nirmala won't have to come after today. So, so basically, Vallabha, Nirmala, Sveta, just catch up on the others. And then the rest of you will just, you know, within maybe a couple of lessons, we'll try and cover, you know, point by point. So today I'm going, you know, we're looking at Unit 12 and we'll look at Unit 11.
It's between 1 to 11 or 1 to 12. How do we just do only one essay, is it? Whatever essay we feel like? Or?
One, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And one essay, 2 pages, means 1,000 words, and just choose one topic.
Okay.
Right away. But we may only have a couple of lessons, you know, to go, 2 or 3 lessons that, you know, may be helpful for those doing it, but apart from that, just really throughout the week, just, you know, work through them. So let's have a look at Unit 12. And, there is...
Comparison between contemporary marriage and missing, something of that sort.
Yes.
Which I was very keen on that topic, and I was confused with that, actually.
In unit 12?
I know that I got stuck up and then I stopped writing.
Yeah. Maybe it was unit 11.
Complaint of marriage or something.
Well, there's in unit 11 or 10 and 11, there was one question. Question 5, saying with reference to the verse and purport. Comment on the advantages of arranged marriage over love marriage in society today. Discuss divorces within ISKCON with reference to these principles. So I didn't choose that one because we did discuss marriages on another topic in the units in module 2. So therefore I left that one out.
So that topic is good, bro.
Yeah.
That's a very practical topic.
But we also we also discussed that when at length when we did that chapter, which was we did, that was chapter 21 in unit 10. So we did discuss that. There'll be, if you can research, see which class we looked at that one.
Right. Yeah,
we covered it. Yeah, we did. We covered that in a discussion when we were doing chapter 21 of Canto 3, the verse and purport. We discussed that at length. You know, divorces within ISKCON and arranged marriages and love marriage and, you know, like that. So if anyone wants to look at that further, I first of all go back to that the class recording.
I'll tell you the date. Can you get the recording?
Yeah.
8th December 2012.
8th of December 2012. Yeah. Have a listen to that first, and if you have any questions, ask me, but hopefully,
December 2016.
2012. Time's going.
Yeah. Well, if you have that recording, can you please forward that?
Yeah,
I'll
send you the
link. I'll be looking forward to that one. I
don't know how
I missed it.
All right. So for today, we're looking at chapter 30 of unit 12, and this verses 8 to 18. Select points from Lord Kapila Dev's description of materialistic family life and discuss how to present them to a contemporary audience. So it's a similar vein. It's preaching application, select points from Lord Kapila's description of materialistic family life. Canto 3, chapter 30, texts 8 to 18. And discuss how to present them to a contemporary audience. That's what we're going to look at today. I have prepared some notes on that, which I'll write up on the board.
Third unit, 12.
Yeah, unit 12. Yeah,
this one also you covered actually, but
I have the notes. Yeah, that's good. So you've got the notes there, and I'm going to write up some of the main notes on the board. Yeah, so especially when we went through module one, we did spend time practically on all of those questions. Wherever there were the homework questions, as we went through, I made sure that they were in the discussion. We didn't always get time in Unit 2, but then we've gone back, you know, since then over some of them. So let's... you'll be good. Just pause that while I write this up. And we're looking at Open Book Question 3, Preaching Application. Select points from Lord Kapila Day's description of materialistic family life. Chapter 30 of Canto 3, verses 8 to 18. And discuss how to present them to a contemporary audience. So first of all, we're just looking at some of the points, step by step. First draw out the points and then discuss them. Okay. So here in verse number 8, what we see within the text and the purports is a comparison of Grihamedi's life and materialistic family person's life compared to a Grihastha, someone who's got a spiritual centre to their life. And what we see, just paraphrasing, is that a Grihamedi, their business is to repeatedly chain themselves to so-called family life, life after life. So it's not really their family, because it's temporary, they have to give it up repeatedly. And thus, perpetually, they're a prisoner of Maya in the cycle of birth and death, despite the fact that they're eternal. They don't experience their eternal nature, they just experience birth and death.
They experience birth and death, not birth after birth.
Yeah, they experience birth and death perpetually, and they're a prisoner to that. Now, prisoner means generally there's bars and shackles, but in the material world, there are no bars and shackles, so what are Maya shackles? Basically, the charms of the opposite sex. So people's own desires to be being attracted to sex life, it keeps them shackled here. The charms of the opposite sex, which appear like love, but is actually sense gratification. So many illusions. They're eternal, and yet that side is covered over. They're just, and they think that they're living in birth and death. So that knowledge of their eternality is covered. They think that they're enjoying love. It's not love, it's sense gratifications. That's another part of illusion. Whereas, the Grihastha lives with their family, but their real purpose is to development of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means they're trying to get out of the illusion of family life. They're coming to the real consciousness. eternal consciousness, full knowledge. And therefore they want to get out of the illusory family life. There's no, they don't have family in this, you know, you can't, you know, trying to make a family life basically with material bodies that are destroyed within time is a real illusory pursuit. So they want to get out of that. But they want to return to their real family in the spiritual world. So family life is there, but it's not here. This is just a reflection of family life, but real family life is in the spiritual world. Actually, you know, in the scriptures it says that the family who circumambulates Govardhan together, then they will also be together in the spiritual world. So, if they want to. What is Maya's illusion? This is verse number 9. In the material world, happiness is no more than the counteraction of miseries. Prabhupada, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a nice example of that counteraction of miseries. You know, that analogy where they get the prisoner, and what they do is they hold them by the head and they push them under the water, and they hold them there. Until they're, you know, just about ready to die, and then they pull them up and they gasp for breath. Now I'm happy. And then push them back down again like that. So that's the counteraction of misery is what we take as happiness. And basically that's it. Verse number 10. Just pause. So verse number 10. Again, just paraphrasing all the points. So another illusion, he's trying to be happy with the family by earning money, sometimes by hook, by crook, and thus he will get a karmic reaction. They don't necessarily have to suffer the karma, but he will. Prabhupada gives an example that sometimes, you know, someone in the family, you know, steals something, although he goes back and everyone eats well and enjoys that wealth, when he gets caught by the police, he's the one who goes to jail, not them. Despite the karmic reaction, that risk and the hard work trying to earn money, you know, despite the family's wealth, he doesn't eat or sleep well. He certainly doesn't eat or sleep any better. And nor is anyone satisfied with him. So a lot of risk, a lot of work, a lot of reaction, and for all of that, he doesn't eat or sleep very well. Nor any better, and nor is anyone satisfied. Still, he's thinking he's the master of the family, but really he's just a servant of Maya, or illusion, just a serving illusion, that's all. Now, here's a good one for the women's livers. in Kali Yuga, because, you know, everything's topsy-turvy. So women like to be the head of the family. So then, all we do then is instead of the husband being in this illusion, then the liberated, so-called liberated woman takes the place. So they say women's liberation, but all they're doing is, you know, taking the place of the husband in the same illusion. That's what we call women's liberation. The husband is suffering an illusion, and the women think, I want that position. I want to be the master of the family. I will not be the master, you know. So therefore, in the name of being liberated, they become the master and they suffer the same illusion and the same reactions. That's liberation. That's the trick of mind. He's rejected like a worn-out box. Verses 15 and 16, yet he's still attached to his family life, like a neglected old dog. 17, the end result is the pain and frustration of dying. 18, thus he dies pathetically in pain while grieving for his family and himself. This has to be discussed according to a contemporary audience. You know, a lot of people would quite easily agree with most of that. I don't think you'd get a lot of argument. But where you would get argument is, you know, the younger generation, you know, looking for love. And, you know, especially Prabhupada really saying there's no love in the material world. So, you know, for them, because they can't see past, you know, the weekend. For them, this would be, you know, quite harsh. You know, sometimes devotees get accused of being, you know, pessimistic or, you know, negative. So, you know, the big thing here is to be aware of that, you know, in writing or speaking on this subject. That the teachings in the books, or the teachings of Lord Kapila, are not portrayed as negative. Depressing. You know, I know devotees who have told me that after becoming a devotee, they can no longer be happy. Because, you know, they read this and they think, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to get. You know, that's what I'm getting now, and that's, you know, what's coming. So they sort of feel that they can't enjoy the material world, and so they become sad. And, you know, I've had devotees actually tell me that they're like suffering because they, you know, since being a devotee, they can't be happy. Yeah. And, you know, it is said that there are two types of people who are happy. That's either the fool or the transcendentalist, the advanced transcendentalist. Ignorance of bliss. Or, you know, those who are actually on the spiritual platform, they can be happy. Those who suffer in this world are those in the middle.
Mm.
So they're no longer a fool, which means that they will somehow hear this sort of knowledge and say, well, that's pretty much right, that's the truth. That's what I'm experiencing and that's what's coming. But they're not able to get the spiritual satisfaction yet. So they suffer more than anyone. So don't remain nearby. Not that anyone here is, but so preaching application means to be aware of, you know, what in what needy way will people take this philosophy. That's, you know, you've got to be aware of that even before you speak it. It's good. You know, there's two types of preachers. Basically, you can speak something and then someone will be really offended by what you said and then you'll try and counteract that. But, you know, better that you already know what's going to, you know, upset them before you say anything. And therefore, you're very careful how you say something. If something has to be said, you know that, you know, there'll be a little bit of a jolt to the system, then you've got to quickly, before it gets out of hand, you know, counteract that in a really nice way, quite quickly and strongly and effectively. So these are the points, and then preaching application means that within your essay you will couch this where there's a predominance of the positive alternative. That's so when someone, you know, reads your essay, the predominance is, you know, quite a positive alternative. That's the preacher. Always, you know, Krishna consciousness is the positive alternative, and that's what we always have to portray, because we know it's a positive alternative, or we should, but when we're presenting this philosophy, a lot of people may not argue with it, they'll accept it, yes, that's the, you know, the black and white of love in the material world, very disappointing, and then you die. In fact, you know, the non-devotees have a saying, you know, they say, life's a bitch and then you die, is what they say. But, you know, sometimes they show a little bit more of a positive spin on it. They say, life's a beach and then you die. So, for a lot of them, death is the good part. Death is a way out. But they don't have a positive alternative. And as a preacher, everything we say should be filled always with a positive alternative.
Just wondering if we can start with a positive note by saying that there is another life, eternal life.
That's right. You've got to get in quick. You do. You do have to get in quick. Yeah. Yeah. And that helps. That helps to really set a nice positive framework very quickly, so that as you're going along, they keep referring back, and then you can add to that positive as you're going along. And that's right. So, you know, there are things, therefore, you know, despite being eternal in this verse number 8, they're experiencing birth and death, they're a prisoner of birth and death, but they're actually eternal. So really, eternal life is there, but they've just forgotten all about it. So there's a positive there that has to be brought out. And, you know, what appears like love, you know, there's no love in the material world. So that would be very, you know, disappointing. But in another sense, there is, because, you know, one, you know, there is... We do have a real family life in the spiritual world, but there's also love in this world when one comes to the spiritual platform. You know? I mean, if we look at Srila Prabhupada, you know, what he did, if you said that someone at the age of 70, no money, travelled across the other end of the world to save someone and give them the greatest possible life they could imagine, and they didn't even know that person, you'd have to say that's love, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. So, you know, this love, there's no love in the material world because it's actually all sense gratification, but once you rise above sense gratification, then there is love. You know, when you're acting not for your own personal sense gratification, but for the benefit of others, then there is love in this world. And therefore, you know, in the nectar of instruction, Rupa Goswami describes, you know, six different activities that are there in a loving exchange. See? Isn't it? It's giving and receiving, you know, food, giving and receiving gifts, and giving and receiving, you know, confidential talks. Now, people in business do all those things. They'll go to a restaurant, they want to do a business deal for their own sense gratification, their own profit. They'll also go to a restaurant and have some food and give some gifts and then talk confidentially about business. They'll also do that, but it's for business. But actually the same activities when there's no motive for one's personal gain, but for the actual, for the benefit, just for the benefit of the other person, then, you know, then we get into the realm where there's love. And Prabhupada, you know, sort of mentioned somewhere that, you know, the closest thing we have to real love in this material world is the love of mother for its child. Why? Because it's selfless. So, you know, mother and child relationship, you know, is very close to love. Because it's still, it's not love. He still, despite that, he still doesn't say that it's love. So, you know, love comes in basically when there is no, you know, selfish motivation at all. So then we can say, yes, there's love, you know, love does exist, you know, even in this world, and in the spiritual world, you know, it is abundant. You know, Maya's illusion, material world happiness is no more than counteraction of misery. And, you know, there are many different examples of that after this. One may question that. So, you know, verses 10 to 18 really paint the picture of the miserable condition someone is actually in and the miserable condition they're creating in their next life. So many scenarios which everyone goes through, and it's be very difficult to refute. So the misery is there. Amongst all of that misery, when the misery reduces a little bit, or somehow we can counteract that, we take that as happiness. Does that mean there's no happiness in the material world? No. You know, there's happiness in the spiritual world, but that same spiritual happiness can also be experienced in this, you know, material world. As we said, if there is selfless activities for the benefit of others, one may experience loving exchanges, and that brings happiness in this world. And but above and beyond that, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, and of course, you know, Bhagavad Gita teaches us that about the happiness within. There are different parts of the Bhagavad Gita. Where this is mentioned. So, for instance, beginning with spiritual peace, chapter 4, verse 39 describes a faithful person who is absorbed in transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses, quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. So there's a platform of 439. And you know, that same message is echoed in 5:12, where it says the steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace. There's no mixture of misery in it. Because he offers the results of all activities to me, whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the results of his labour, becomes entangled. So that is the same, you know, the platform of peacefulness. Verse 21 of the fifth chapter, it describes there that a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure or external objects, but always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme.
That is not applicable to Grihastha,
no? Grihasthas don't think of Krishna.
No, but they're saying that a self-realized person, that is referring to a person who has given up family life and is just meditating. That's how I took it.
You can be a Grihastha and you have given it up.
No, that is like Bhakti Vinod Thakur, that level of Grihastha Prabhu. That is...
No, actually, Krishna is speaking this to Arjuna.
Yeah, but he's telling that.
What text is it?
That's chapter 5, text 21. Krishna is... All of these verses are directed to Arjuna and, of course, us, because Arjuna is wanting to give up family life and give up his duty. And Krishna is telling him that basically there's no need for him to do that. If he just, you know, if he's not acting for his material sense pleasure or gain of external objects, but, you know, acting for the Supreme, then they enjoy a pleasure within. And that person enjoys unlimited happiness, for they concentrate on the Supreme. So he's saying that to Arjuna, that, you know, he's not saying, he doesn't say anywhere in the Gita that if you want to enjoy the pleasure within, you have to give up family life and become sannyasi. In fact, he says the opposite. He's telling Arjuna repeatedly, you know, put that out of your mind, Arjuna. Don't think in those terms you have to stop doing your duty, give up your family, so many things like that. And Arjuna may be thinking, oh, then how do I, you know, come to that platform? Krishna's saying that, you know, you're simply not attracted to material sense pleasure or external objects, and you're concentrating on the Supreme. Now, whether you're a Grihastha or a Sannyas, you know, one can be, you know, doing their works, as Arjuna did, for the pleasure of the Supreme, not for sense gratification or, you know, the gain of, you know, like that. So, in fact, the whole Gita, Krishna is preaching to Arjuna, don't give up your family life, don't give up your duties, and shows him all the qualifications by which he can be situated in boundless transcendental happiness, as the yogis are, by in fact remaining a family, you know, Krishna's convincing Arjuna, remain a family man, still you'll be the best of yogis. So, and he tells him all the various qualifications. So, I don't know how you can get that this is not for Grihastha, because the whole book is, in one sense, dedicated to a Grihastha. The whole Bhagavad Gita is dedicated to convincing Arjuna to remain a Grihastha. So how you can say that these instructions are not meant for Grihastha, it means you missed the whole book. See, there's a picture. I'll show you the picture. Go on in there. There's Krishna, there's Arjuna. Grihastha. What do you think? And I'll just read this one here as well. And he's speaking this again to Arjuna. Chapter 5, text number 24. One whose happiness is within. So he's saying his happiness. Where is it? It's within. Who is active within. What is active within? There's love. There's pure consciousness, pure thoughts, pure, you know, thinking, feeling, willing. That's active within. Actually, when we work within. Prabhupada mentions that. When you actually work, you work within. and then it is secondarily manifested outside.
Mm.
So one whose happiness is within, who is active within, who rejoices within, and is illumined within, is actually the perfect mystic. He's liberated in the supreme, and ultimately he attains the supreme. So there, you know, some very nice verses. Now,
is it practical when you are working in the material world? Is what is my question?
Yes, and that's what Krishna tells Arjuna.
Mm-hmm.
And for them,
you say that you see within. I'm thinking.
So, in what happens in chapter 6, Krishna starts talking about the sannyasis, the yogis. Yeah? And he tells Arjuna the yoga practice of those who are not in family life, you know, the yogis and the sannyasis. And he describes that yoga process to Arjuna. And then when we get, Arjuna basically rejects that, but he rejects the yoga process, but Krishna explaining what the yogis do to be happy, and they get into trance. So in those previous verses, we've discussed about one whose happiness within, they're always in trance, like that. So then Krishna describes in chapter 6 the yoga process by which one remains in trance, how the sannyasis do it. When they get into that trance, verse 20 and 23 of the 223 of the sixth chapter says, the stage of perfection is called trance or samadhi, when one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. So this is a further explanation of those verses we've already quoted. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless, transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. So very, you know, detailed explanation of what that enjoying within means. It makes it very clear. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty, family life. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Yeah, so actually one who's in trance, family life is not much of a very big obstacle or difficulty. Krishna is talking about even the greatest difficulty. You know, family life can be, you know, there's some tolerance, some disturbance, like that. But one who is in trance, you know, that is nothing. You know, you think of Arjuna's situation. What is the few, you know, disagreements he has with Draupadi compared to being on the battlefield, having to fight with all the relatives and teachers and so forth. So now Arjuna rejects that. He says, "Oh, I can't come to that platform through this yoga process." But Krishna explains that in verse 29, let's start from verse 27, he says, the yogi whose mind is fixed on me verily attains the highest happiness. By virtue of his identity with Brahman, he is liberated. His mind is peaceful. His passions are quieted and he is free from sin. Steady in the self, being freed from all material contamination, the yogi achieves the highest perfectional stage of happiness, in touch with the supreme consciousness. A true yogi observes me and all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, a self-realized man sees me everywhere. So he describes. And he says, for one who sees me, Krishna, everywhere, and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So Krishna is not describing, he is describing, this is the real yogi, not one who's doing asanas, not one who's doing yama and the other one?
Yeah.
Yama. Not one doing pranayams and so many different things. Who is a true yogi? One who's always in trance, meditating, and never forgets the Supreme Lord who's residing within his heart.
So that's what you said, Prabhu, in the starting. Two people are happy, the transcendentalist and the purpose ignorant.
That's right.
So this is possible for Bhakti, you know, Thakur, Sarasvati Thakur, Prabhupada.
Yes.
But we are caught in between. At least I'm caught in between, Prabhu.
So, at the end of this chapter, I'll come back to that statement. So at the end, Krishna describes very clearly, where is happiness? Happiness is there for the yogi. And then he describes, of all yogis, he always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So happiness is found for one who is connected with the Supreme. And that person is called a yogi. And the highest yogi is one who's always thinking of Krishna in any of his different transcendental forms. But the yogi has the highest happiness boundless, unlimited, which cannot be affected even by the greatest disturbances in this material world. Now, your statement there about those in between, and it says, we go back to chapter 5, if you look at verses from chapter 5, verses 25 to 26, Krishna addresses that we may say, oh, I'm not on that platform. But Krishna assures you that anyone who attempts to be on that platform will very soon be on that platform. And he says that in verse 25 of the 5th chapter, it says, one who is beyond duality and doubt, whose mind is engaged within, who is always busy working for the welfare of all sentient beings, and who is free from all sins, achieves liberation in the Supreme. And then he says, those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-discipline and constantly endeavouring for perfection are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So, we may not be on that platform, but those verses which describe that wonderful happiness within, Krishna says that if you are constantly endeavouring for it in the right way, as he describes in those verses, you are assured you'll be on that platform in the very near future. And that in itself is a source of happiness.
Is it more that, like in the later chapters, that is from Krishna says, "I give the devotee what he lacks." Mm. It's very that is in.
Yeah.
I give the person
9,
what he 22, lacks.
9:22, I think.
Yeah.
That. You know, I preserve what they lack and carry what they have.
Yeah. So which chapter is that?
922.
Nice. But I think those slokas are giving a little more hope.
Yeah, that's right. And that hope means happiness. You know, Prabhupada describes it as something like a journey home. You know, sometimes a person has to travel far and long away from family and home. And there's a lot of difficulties and what have you, and separation. But then they begin the journey home. They're not home yet, but the fact that they're on their way is actually a sense of relief and happiness. And the closer they get that, you know. So it is like that, you know, that you know, the end of the troubles and the difficulties and the end of the situation where you're going further away from what you want, that, you know, that is finished. Now you're coming closer to what you want. And that is the source that happens. Day by day, you're getting closer. And for such a traveller, the difficulties, it's more bearable, the difficulties of travel when you're going home, than the difficulties of travel when you're leaving and maybe away from home for a long time. When you've left home, you left your family, and it may be months, and you've still got so much to do in a different place, a difficult place, those difficulties are more unbearable.
Yeah.
When you start returning home, and you're getting closer and closer, you have the same difficulties, but you don't even think so much because you're happy to be home. So, and Krishna is saying that, that home, supreme happiness within is you're assured of that if you're constantly endeavouring the right way. So apart from that, then there's the process of bhakti, which in itself is that Rupa Goswami describes that there are five principal items of bhakti that, if performed properly, one can experience bhava bhakti. That means the platform of experiencing the transcendental ecstasy of samadhi can be experienced even in a neophyte. Bhava bhakti means one is able to enter samadhi. You're in a constant state of samadhi, bhava bhakti. And those five items of bhakti are so potent that even as a neophyte, one will experience that bhava bhakti. So that, again, is a real positive. One doesn't necessarily have to wait until the very end. You know, it's something like, if you tell a child that, they know it's their birthday and they're going to get a birthday cake at the end, but they've got to eat all their vegetables and things first. And they say, oh, it's too long, it's too hard. You might just give them a little taste of the cake. See, that's what you're going to get, and they'll have a little taste, and then, it keeps them happy. I remember one time I was traveling with my daughters, the older daughters now, but they're probably about 3 and 4 or something, and I bought 2 drinks. In the car, it was a long journey. I wanted them to drink it a little later, otherwise they get thirsty after 2 minutes and want another drink. So I bought them 2 drinks and I showed them. I said, those ones, and you put the straw in the little fruit boxes, and then you take. So that, are you nodding? Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know the you go. So they said to me, "Dad, can we just hold the drink? I'm not going to drink it." I said, well, a couple of kids, of course you can hold a bug. And then another couple of minutes later, "Dad, we just want to take the straw off the plastic. We're not going to drink it. We just want to see what the straw..." Okay.
They're very good kids, at least they're asking from.
No, they were.
They won't even
very
ask.
Well behaved, very well.
No, it
is not. And then they said, "Dad, we just want to put the straw in the box, we're not going to drink it." I said, "Yeah, sure." And the next thing I turned around within a minute and they drank the whole box, you know, like that.
Like but the monkeys and the Ekadashi story?
Yeah, what's that one?
What's that? Prabhupada, it's in Iskon Desire, you want to tell the story that the next day was Ekadashi and the monkeys said, okay, we're going to fast for Ekadashi.
Right.
No, not next day, that day was Ekadashi,
yeah.
That day. And they said, okay, by the end of the day when we have to break it, maybe we'll not be strong enough to pluck the fruits.
Right.
So let's at least pluck the fruits.
Oh,
they collected
yeah.
the fruits.
Right.
Okay, let's at least hold them in our hands close
yeah.
to the mouth because it'll be too weak.
Right.
Okay, let's
yeah.
at least put them in our mouth and then
yeah.
not chew them, but then.
That's exactly what happened.
So you
just,
yeah.
you know. So, anyway. You know, as you can see, that you know, if we present quite strongly, some you know this happiness within, and the power of bhakti, and you know there is happiness. You can, you know, I remember one dream I had where you know Prabhupada appeared to me in the dream. He said, Ganga, whatever you're looking for is right within your lap. You know, in other words, you know, and then he just disappeared. I woke up and I thought about, you know, all the things I have as a devotee, you know. There's nothing that, you know, it's all there. You know, pretty much as soon as, you know, if you want to be present with Krishna, he's right there in your heart. You know, you don't have to do anything else, you know. He's already there. You know, you want to associate with, you know, sacred persons of the highest caliber, you can read Srimad Bhagavatam, you can think about them, you can pray to them. They're there giving you the mercy. You know, for a devotee, if you actually think about it, the spiritual world is right there for the taking. You know, it's just right there in your lap. You know, but we are usually preoccupied thinking of something else. But so, you know, that's what we want to present. It's right there. It's within your grasp. From the very beginning of devotional service, you know, it's within your grasp. And, you know, this is the, you know, as Prabhupada said, devotees are very pessimistic to material life, but very optimistic to spiritual life. So, you know, this is the pessimistic look of material life, but we're very optimistic of the immediate and ultimate happiness there from you know, bhakti. And that's, you know, and that's how to nicely present that, put all those things in. Yeah. Now, we'll just leave it there today, but the next question I would suggest that you take up for chapter for units 11 I don't think we had no we didn't have one for unit 10 because we did a presentation so and for unit 11 I would suggest you look at the Canto 3, chapter 25, verses 21 to 24. It's a personal application. List some of the qualities that are sadly mentioned in those verses which you find particularly inspiring and discuss your plan to further develop these qualities in yourself.
Which one is the preaching?
Yeah, personal application. So really, you know, there's those nice statements by Kapila, today, about the qualities of the sadhu, 24 qualities of the sadhu, 26 qualities of the sadhu. And you just really read through those and see which ones inspire you and just mention how you, you know, in what way you're implementing them or, you know.
26 qualities of pure devotee.
Of a devotee, of a sadhu, yeah, devotee. They're there to you know, some degree of advance. So that, you know, that's, should be very good. So the next time we meet, we will be discussing unit 9, you know, 9, 8 and 7, and you know, I may have already some notes on it which we'll write up and have a look at that. So be prepared for 9, 8 and 7. We've only got a few lessons left, so we may do, you know, 3 units, you know, get the points down in a row. And
through Unit 16, what is the question? It's a personal application, but what's the question?
Unit 16.
The third one.
The third one.
Yes.
Discuss the relevance of the following statement in regard to your devotional life. The more one enjoys sex during youth, the more he suffers in old age. So it's chapter 28 of the fourth canto, in verse number 1. And really, it just quotes that same sentence anyway.
Chapter 28.
Yeah. Text number 1. The more one enjoys sex life during youth, the more he suffers in old age. It's a personal application.
I couldn't find the question
in the online one. It's black, isn't it?
It's there. Soft copy is
right,
good.
Let's leave it there.
Soft copy is good.
Which one?
Third one. I have it here.
Yeah, that's good.
Switch
open because it's
switch off.